Christian Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Chronically Fabulous, Finding Wholeness and Hope Living with Chronic Illness by Marissa Zeppieri, narrated by Emily Ellett. 1. Wrong place, wrong time. There are two kinds of pain in this world, pain that hurts and pain that alters. Denzel Washington. When I was 22 years old, taking an afternoon stroll in North Miami's Aventura Mall, a raven-haired elderly lady veered past a small crowd and made her way over to me. Everything about her radiated free spirit, a colorful headscarf, a flowing dress with multiple layers of lace, and long, vibrant, jeweled necklaces that danced around her upper body as she moved. I was startled when she stopped directly in front of me and looked me in the eyes. Gently taking my hands, she said, "God will use these hands to change people's lives." She made the visionary statement with complete certainty. Today, when I think about that moment, I realize I never answered her. In my surprise at her unbidden declaration, I could only stare into her deep, caramel-colored eyes and nod my head up and down in appeasing agreement. Though it seemed like a random event at first, I couldn't stop thinking about this woman and what she said as I drove back home that day. At the time, I was already several years into a college program to earn my registered nursing degree. I had a life plan. This plan was on a schedule and offered me stability, financial freedom, and a meaningful outlet for one of my greatest passions, helping people. Nursing checked all the boxes. Sure, I would use my hands to hang IVs, deliver medication, and offer someone comfort by holding theirs during a challenging moment or eternal transition. But my gut told me this stranger's message held a deeper meaning, that my hands would be used to provide guidance and comfort in a way that didn't involve nursing. The moment of meeting her was striking, though after years passed, I forgot the message and the messenger. Coming out of a season of complete brokenness, the life plan I had so meticulously created ended in a set of unforgettable moments. And instead of becoming a nurse and working in the medical field to save the lives of others, it took an extraordinary team of nurses and medical personnel to save my own life. Now, that one sentence spoken to me by a complete stranger took on an entirely different meaning for my life. What began as a day of errands and work on a breathtaking April Sunday in 2001 ended in my fight for survival. Two events lined up at the exact moment on that day. A drunk driver, also under the influence of drugs, in a pickup truck, and me, a pedestrian barely weighing in at 100 pounds, crossing a street. And for reasons I believe are far greater than we humans can understand, my body and the frame of that Ford Ranger traveling around 45 miles per hour collided just after 7 p.m. in downtown Fort Lauderdale. One drunk driver on drugs, one truck, one moment. That is all it took to forever alter the course of my life, to crush my body, and to rip me away from the dreams and goals that fueled my waking hours and the independence I sought. The event broke me in every way you can possibly imagine. During my year-long recovery, and for some time after, I dealt with the impact of that single moment, physically overcoming broken ribs, internal bleeding, a fractured pelvis, a multi-lacerated liver, and a head injury. The cumulative impact required months of rehab for me to begin walking again. Emotionally, the struggle continued well beyond the many grueling daily hours of rehab, as feelings of frustration, bitterness, anger, and depression took hold. I daily battled PTSD, and spiritually I was on a desperate search for answers. Why did this happen? Why did I survive? How did I survive? And how will I move forward? As I watched so much of my hard work and many of my dreams come to an unexpected and abrupt end, I questioned whether there could be something bigger than myself at work. Many of us experience seasons of brokenness in our lives. Yours may not have been triggered by 3,000 pounds of steel barreling toward you, but the impact was likely just as crushing, just as traumatic. Life will hit us with different seasons that knock us to the ground, leaving us battered, bruised, and feeling empty. No one is exempt. We battle with illness and loneliness, divorce, death of our loved ones, our identity, infertility, financial ruin, accidents, and chronic illness, as well as other challenges that are societal, environmental. Life's trials often leave us with mascara-stained cheeks and swollen lips, our faces buried in our bedroom pillows. In that brokenness, we often feel completely helpless. And it can be hard to recognize in the midst of this brokenness that what we do in these moments, when the world seems dark and we feel completely alone, will shape our beliefs and ultimately our legacy. Unlike other difficult times, this season of brokenness was one of the most difficult I ever faced, and it brought me to the end of myself. And it may sound odd, but it's also something for which I am eternally grateful. Coming to the end of myself forced me to purge self-sufficiency and recognize that something much greater than myself was at work in my life. It turned my young mind from being obsessed with life planning and a career and directed it toward a higher purpose. That fateful April day, I found myself suddenly trapped. Anger and bitterness began to take root. Crippling PTSD-fueled anxiety attacks spawned out of nowhere. Losing my independence and having to solely rely on others because of the physical injuries I endured put me over the edge. And that also became the start of my struggle with severe autoimmune issues. While many have different ways they consider and depend on a higher power, for me, the situation led me to turn to my faith tradition. In Psalms, there's a reference to God's response to those who have a broken spirit, Psalm 51, verse 17. This isn't a reference to our being shamed or degraded or beaten down, but as I read it and relate it to my life, it refers to a sense of God witnessing that moment of my life where my own spirit reached the end of itself. In that moment, and in my desperation to be free, I discovered God, a God who wouldn't leave me in a broken state, a God who does great work from broken places, slowly restoring and rebuilding us. It's in this moment where our independence and self-reliance have been released that the rebuilding process can begin. I was desperate to be nourished and rebuilt. My body was physically unrecognizable. But a deep kind of joy and excitement began to manifest as each new day now brought unrecognized challenges. Years later, I understood that this season in my life, from the moment of impact to rehab to the longer challenge of immune issues, was an opportunity to grow and discover God working in me. A new hunger began to emerge. I discovered an insatiable emotional, spiritual, and physical hunger. And I devoured the learning process, discovering knowledge in a variety of areas: food, nutrition, medicine, the Bible, and learning around God-given gifts and a life of purpose. Through the mentoring of my gastronomically gifted Italian grandmother, I learned how to nourish my broken body with the help of food and herbs. She also helped me discover that my broken heart, my ended dreams, and my crushed spirit were a starting place to learn faith. Fabulous Vines, name your role models and supporters. Take a few moments and jot down the names of those who have served as role models, supporters, and cheerleaders during your most challenging seasons. Write a note to, or take a few minutes to call these special people, and thank them for their encouragement and love. As I started writing this book, I began to see that so much of the wisdom of food, of nutrition, of faith was shared with me by my grandmother and my mother, two women who had a monumental impact on my life and my recovery. All of us, I'd wager, while our life stories are different, have key figures who served as role models, wisdom givers, and comforters. Sometimes it takes some deeper reflection to surface those names. But holding fast to your memories of these special people, even as you read this book, may help you rediscover and awaken some life-shifting advice or experience you may have tucked away that now can help guide you through your current challenges. My hope is that by sharing my stories and the insights I have gained about rebuilding a life, releasing psychological brokenness, living in hope, and discovering nutrition and the healing ways of food, I can encourage you to persevere through your own difficult seasons, your loss or silence or mourning. You may experience the outside world as cold, barren, and winter-like. But my hope is that through this book, you will remember that even if loss or a chronic condition makes you feel broken, spring is just around the corner. Your season is going to change. And spring is a time of planting, rebuilding, and regrowth. Spring, as I reflect on it, is the season of the seed, the season of something so powerful and small. Small enough that if we saw it on the sidewalk or on a table, we would ignore it or brush it off. But the thing about a seed is that it has to be immersed into sudden darkness. It has to break open first so that it can grow. So that, like a seedling with a unique identity and design, it allows that which is greater than you, perhaps the thing you call the ground of all being, God, to work in you when you are buried deep in total darkness, preparing you to push your way through hardened, brumal ground in order to allow the light of God to nourish you and provide the sustenance you need to live out your wonderful purpose. There is a profound connection I have discovered on this journey through brokenness and restoration, and a link between faith and food, how they both hold the incredible power to heal, nourish, and rebuild our lives. Whatever challenge has brought you to this book, I hope you'll discover that even what is chronic or broken and waiting to emerge can be fabulous, whole, life-giving, and life-saving, especially you. Recipe: carrot, ginger, and turmeric soup with orange. Prep time, 15 minutes. Cook time, 30 to 35 minutes. Method: stovetop, blender, or immersion blender. Yield: 4 to 6 servings. Sometimes we are overwhelmed and can't eat anything. Sometimes all we want is something nourishing. To me, there is nothing better than a warm, creamy soup on a chilly fall or winter evening. Made with fresh ginger and turmeric, this recipe packs a lot of anti-inflammatory power behind it, while also nourishing your body with a variety of nutrients. Plus, the cayenne and black pepper, I add extra, give this soup a deep, peppery undertone. If you don't have butternut squash on hand, you can use extra carrots. And there are many ways to add a final touch depending on your tastes, such as topping it off with plain Greek yogurt, parsley, or even spicy chopped jalapenos. Enjoy. Ingredients: 2 tablespoons olive oil, 2 cups carrots chopped, 2 cups butternut squash chopped, 1 yellow onion chopped, 1 fennel bulb, greens removed, chopped. 4 cloves garlic, pressed or minced. 2 to 3 inch nub of fresh ginger, grated. 1 tablespoon turmeric, 1/4 teaspoon Himalayan or sea salt, 1/4 to 1/2 teaspoon black pepper, depending on your preference, dash or 2 of cayenne pepper, 3 cups vegetable broth, 1/2 cup milk or milk alternative, zest of 1 medium orange. Optional toppings: fresh parsley, plain Greek yogurt, minced jalapenos, cracked black pepper, extra salt, cumin, avocado. In a large saucepan or Dutch oven, heat oil on medium to high heat. Add carrots, butternut squash, onion, and fennel. Saute until the vegetables start to soften, about 5 minutes. Add garlic, ginger, turmeric, salt, pepper, and cayenne to the saucepan, and cook for another 3 minutes or so. Next, add vegetable broth, milk or milk alternative, and orange zest. Bring all of this to a boil, then cover and simmer the mixture for about 20 minutes. Turn off heat and let the soup sit for about 5 minutes. Next, add the soup to a blender in batches, blending each batch for a few seconds until creamy. An easier method for this step is using an immersion blender directly in the saucepan. Once the entire soup has been blended, add additional salt and pepper to your taste preference. Serve immediately. You can top this soup off with Greek yogurt, parsley, or even avocado. 2. A heaping serving of love. You don't choose your family. They are God's gift to you, as you are to them. Desmond Tutu. Saturdays were reserved for baking in my grandmother's kitchen. Everyone waited in anticipation all week long, praying biscotti, pignoli cookies, and chocolate-filled rugelach would be on the menu. In true Italian custom, we found my grandmother in the kitchen each morning by 6:30 a.m., formulating the day's culinary endeavors. Like most Italian families and many cultures, cuisine, its preparation and delivery into as many mouths as humanly possible, has always been an integral part of our family's life. But for my grandmother, the kitchen was her sanctuary. And unless a family member was specifically invited in, it was common knowledge in my family that you stayed out of her way. If a child crossed the threshold, a wooden spoon might threaten. Or if an adult entered and interrupted the process, there was usually a naughty word or two in Italian headed their way. The off-limits rules of my grandmother's kitchen sanctuary had only one exception: me. I can't tell you if she was tickled by my fascination for cooking, or if she noticed a creative talent for food I was still too young to comprehend, but I quickly became her trusted kitchen sidekick. She was eager to pour out knowledge about her intimate, healing relationship with food, and I drank it all in. And in her own stoic way, she was eager to pour out love, which I fully consumed. For me, the kitchen held a kind of sacred light, a healing light. Those lights were ones I would later return to, peruse like a shelf of healing spices and herbs, each moment with its own wisdom or scent of love and support. The light of my grandmother shined in those thousands of hours we spent together in her kitchen. When I needed that support most, the reminder that I am loved and that I was safe, that light was there. And the memories of a healing kitchen continue to be a stabilizing force for me when life events dim that light. It's those distinctive life moments all of us have met that we can hold deeply in our memory, where unconditional love and hope reside. Those memories continually remind us of the healing people and healing spaces we were blessed by, memories that can still bring us balance and peace during troubled times. When I was a child, I didn't quite understand how significant a role the kitchen would play throughout my entire life. But it grew in its significance, even in my childhood. Becoming comfortable in the kitchen was my first challenge. At the start, my grandmother delegated the simplest of tasks to me. For a lengthy season, I was the flower girl, It was my job to evenly and lightly dust flour all over her round glass tabletop in the corner of her small, gold and avocado-colored kitchen. My young, tiny hands could only hold so much flour. But where I fell short in speed, I made up with an intense desire to be precise. Am I going too slow? I wondered as I meticulously spread the flour. But she never rushed me. Instead, she was a continuous source of encouragement, nodding her head in acknowledgement of a job well done, followed by an exuberant, "You're getting better every day." Once my task was complete, a fine dusting of flour not only covered the tabletop, but lingered in a heavy cloud in the air. My grandmother would position a thick slab of dough on top of the table and get to work. Tiny and barely weighing 100 pounds, my grandmother Rose was a powerhouse. And what she lacked in size, she made up for in wit, talent, wisdom, and a fiery personality. We often called her the General, Chief, or Sarge. Not everyone has a Rose or a Chief in their life, maybe not a grandmother or even a relative, but perhaps a mentor or friend, a confidant, cooking buddy, or secret keeper has been a steady presence in your life, someone you've seen as a gift. These gift mentors are those who see the best and the worst in us and continue to love us just the same. I've been blessed to have life-giving, God-given relationships early in life with both my grandmother and my mother by my side. And for me, that bond with my grandmother was heightened and amplified through our mutual love for the kitchen and creating culinary masterpieces for our family to enjoy. As I matured in those early years, more tasks were added to my proverbial plate. Although I was only allowed to watch her work her magic in the kitchen, aside from flour dusting, I was later given responsibility for preparing the mise en place. When I was 8 years old, my favorite recipe to create with Grandma was the rougelach. Grandma adapted her own recipe after years of sampling pastries from Jewish neighbors while growing up in East New York. While not an Italian baked good, the Ashkenazic pastry was her favorite and topped our Saturday morning kitchen to-do list. The filling would also be different, however. Some weeks it was chocolate, and other weeks a combination of raisins, preserves, cinnamon, and walnuts. My grandmother would stand closely behind me, wrapping her arms around mine. The scent of her perfume, a warm vanilla musk, filled the air. While out of the corner of my eye, I would catch glimpses of auburn-colored waves framing her face. Gently cupping her hands over mine, we would lift the wide side of the triangular piece of dough together and roll it to form the crescent-shaped rougelach. "Try to keep the dough tight, Marissa," Grandma gently reminded me as we slowly rolled an individual piece of rougelach. "We don't want any of those goodies falling out," she added, a wink in her eye as she stepped away, allowing me a solo attempt. At first, the triangles I shaped were never quite like my grandmother's. Unattractive, lopsided, too loose, gooey preserves seeping from every crack imaginable, a far cry from the fabulous pastry cookies my grandmother's hands created. But she reassured me that I'd have it down in no time. Whenever I think back on this memory today, I'm reminded to not only recognize but show appreciation for the special people in life who still cheer us on, even when our performance or presentation is nowhere near perfect. For me, Grandma was always my greatest cheerleader. Cleanup was another special aspect of kitchen time. During cleanup, when we noticed a raisin, chocolate chip, or rogue walnut nub lingering on the table, my grandmother and I wasted no time in treating ourselves to it. Like any good Italian with a healthy appetite, I now have a brain forever ingrained with the rule that food is never wasted, especially food items that are the occasional outlier from the weekly grocery budget, like chocolate. In my grandparents' home, chocolate was a luxury. Grandma and Bogey, a nickname my brother and I gave my grandfather, never were shy or embarrassed about their humble beginnings. This moment in life, the early 1980s, was simple. No Instagram highlight reels, no foodie posts. They were genuinely happy with the simple life they worked so hard to build. Grandma cooked or baked, not for accolades, but for the satisfaction she received when the family sat together eating in quiet contentment, a rare silence for us. As the food on our plates would begin to clear, a roar of laughter would erupt, followed by stories, news, updates about our lives, and reflection on the day's events. Most importantly, encouragement and love were generously apportioned among those at the table. For some, those intimate human connections are missed in a busy world. For others, the dinner table is still a unifier, a daily act that requires so little of us, yet provides an abundance of benefits. Eating together, research shows, means that members of a family exhibit better performance in work and school, and children have closer relationships with parents and fewer issues with experimentation or later dependence on drugs and alcohol. Those who gather intentionally around the table also tend to make healthier food choices, including often subbing fruits and vegetables for fried fatty foods and soda, in addition to gaining a more realistic view on food portion size. And repeated studies show that these regular gatherings help minimize the disconnection we can often feel due to busy work and school schedules, because they reconnect us with one another through sharing and storytelling and invite us to be present in the moment. For my family, mealtime was a sacred act, and there was no excuse on God's green earth that would exempt you from missing it. In fact, if friends or other family members happened to be at the home during mealtime, guess what? They were eating too. End of story. Now, as an adult, childhood friends have shared with me that my grandmother's food and the act of eating at the table with my family remain one of the most poignant memories they hold. For me, that gathering around the table and the kitchen time preparing serves as a reminder that God created us for human connections. Connections that reach beyond a ringing cell phone, chiming email, or technological distraction. Fabulous finds, the perfect indulgence. Chocolate is the perfect temporary indulgence, if your diet allows for it. And dark chocolate not only tastes amazing, but is known for its mood-enhancing qualities due to its ability to raise serotonin levels. Aim for 70% cacao or higher to reap the most benefits. From early stories of Scripture, Abraham showed hospitality to angel strangers. And the Last Supper Jesus shared was around a table with both friends and an enemy. There was always a chair. Even a short shared meal of 30 minutes can be beneficial, life-changing. Though, don't tell my family, they still believe some dinnertime events are meant to last an hour or more, depending on the occasion. From the customs my grandparents' generation held to the customs of Italian culture, large and lengthy mealtimes were our norm. Meals were meant to be shared and created community filled with family, friends, and neighbors. As children of Italian immigrants, my grandparents grew up in New York with hopes of more suitable opportunities. Growing up, I watched a delicate balancing act take place in their home. While mealtime was a place of abundance, an economic recession mindset still resonated in other areas, ensuring indulgence or extravagance would not become commonplace in their home. As I grew up, surrounded by life-giving forces and community, life almost seemed to be a revolving door of responsibilities that would teach me about frugality, including ripping napkins in half to double the amount before placing them on the table, or reusing every glass jar you can get your hands on as a drinking glass or storage container, only turning on the air conditioner once or twice a year, rolling pennies, hanging your wet clothes on the line, even if there was a clothes dryer, and saving the leftover lard after cooking. The lard seriously disturbed me. Each time I opened my grandparents' refrigerator for juice or a piece of cheese, swirls of brown and yellow fat, with an occasional crumb of food, stared back at me from a used glass jar that formerly housed olives. As I've grown, I've realized the magical content of this jar.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?